and welcome to the Plan 8 podcast. I'm your host, Patrick Rowenhouse. My guests today are members of the development team of an application called Boxy, a social network integrated media center. Today we have Boxy CEO, Abner Rowan, head user interface designer, Whitney Hess, and communications and PR director for Boxy, Andrew Kippen. How are you guys doing today?
Good, great.
Thanks.
So last time I saw you guys, we were at the Boxy meetup party in New York at Webster Hall. Thank you, Webster Hall.
Where legends are made.
Yes, it was quite a turnout you guys had.
Yeah, it was amazing. We didn't expect so many people to show up, and it was great.
What was the total? I think it was like, I heard like 900 something.
We had close to, I think, 992 people RSVP'd, and about 600 or more made it to the event, so it was an amazing turnout.
Now, for people to know who don't know what Boxy is of my my viewership and listenership, what is Boxy? It's a, for basic gist, it's a media player, like kind of media center application, but can you tell me the history of it a little bit?
Sure, the history of it, of Boxy, and it is a media center. It's an open source and social media center, a software download that you can run on Mac and Linux and soon enough on PCs. The history of it begins with an open source project called XBMC that started over in Europe and was a hack that you ran on your old Xbox machine. And we were all users going back 4 or 5 years. And we fell in love with the project, and we thought that there is a great opportunity in creating Firefox for the living room, creating an open source product that is going to put the user first and going to enable people to stream the media that they have at their home network as well as access stuff from the internet. And we set out to do that and started coding early in 2007.
Okay. Now, from a UI aspect, I'm going to ask Whitney, since she is the UI designer on this, what were your initial thoughts in designing the user interface for Boxy? It is very, very intuitive in order to go around the menus while maintaining this kind of really nice aesthetic that is, you know, with the transparencies and stuff like that. What kind of difficulties did you have in designing it?
Well, I cannot take any credit for the existing Boxy application. I was brought on board as a consultant to help Boxy go from alpha to beta to reach a wider audience, a more mainstream audience, and also to do an evaluation of the existing system to figure out how we could make it even more intuitive and easier and more pleasurable to use. I had a great product to work with because, as you said, it already has a very sleek design and a really easy-to-use interface given all that it's capable of doing. But in the research that I conducted, I found that there were some hiccups along the way, that there were some problems navigating between screens, or that there were certain features that people weren't making the most use out of because they didn't understand what they could fully do. So as we move into beta, we're hoping to make some of those things clearer and start to create a navigation system that is more aligned with how people are thinking about how they want to consume TV shows and movies and videos and music and photos, as opposed to the way that it's organized now.
Are there any reference points for the beta? Since I haven't seen any pictures when we were at the Boxy meetup, that you guys said you were going to post some pictures, but I haven't seen anything yet. But are there any kind of references of design that you're using to base your, you know, kind of media layout on? Or are you guys going to try to do something radical in the way it's designed?
Well, my goal was never to change the design drastically from a look and feel perspective. I think, you know, as you said, and as we've heard from a lot of our users, people really love how it feels. There is a great simplicity to it, but it's also very stylish. It renders extremely well on an HDTV. So as we move into beta, people are not going to be turning on Boxy for the first time and seeing something completely unrecognizable. It's still very much going to feel the same, but what we're intending to do, like we were saying at the Boxy meetup at Webster Hall, is essentially just reorganize things add some features that we feel have been missing or that we have heard from our users are highly requested, as well as simplifying some of the features that exist today. For example, a few of the social features, which aren't being put to great use at the moment.
One of the interesting features, again, you mentioned the social features, is the integration of Twitter and the fact that, you know, if I'm watching a movie, all of a sudden my friends will see Patrick is watching The Matrix. And are you planning on adding any other features with the social feature where it's like if you're watching it, you could give it a thumbs up or like give little text messages in the middle of it?
Yeah, we think social is a big part of consumption of media, and people want to be able to share it with their friends or with the world. So we're going to do some work on enabling you to connect Boxy with additional services, not just Twitter. And as you suggested, also enabling users to tweet not just what they're watching, but also give a little bit more color of what they think of what they're watching or listening to right now. So this is, hopefully it's going to be part of the beta, but this is definitely a direction that we're going to take it to.
What are the plans for the monetization of Boxy? All projects, you know, are great and fun when you start them out, but eventually it is a business. I mean, you as CEO, you take the kind of, you're a corporate executive. And where are you guys going to try to go to find income for it?
So we would like to find a way that we can monetize Boxy that is a natural path for the Boxy service and is not hurting the user experience and keeps the service for free. And being an open source project and a very transparent company, we think we should also be very transparent about the business model. And the way we think about it right now is that Boxy should be forever free for the user, should also be a free platform for content owners. So if you want your content on Boxy, you shouldn't be required to pay in order to get it on Boxy. Where we think we can start generating revenues is if we can show those content partners that we can help them promote their content to our users and drive more traffic to their content, then we can get compensated for that. And I think that's a fair model.
It's kind of similar to like a website banner ads. If you get a click to it, you get paid like that.
I think it's more similar to Firefox. If you build a website, you don't have to pay Firefox in order for Firefox to be able to display your website. But if you want Firefox to have a link directly to your site from the browser, like Google are paying money for the search bar in Firefox, then you'd pay for it. And I think it's a similar model.
Okay, I see. Now, there's some interesting stories that have been happening with Boxy lately. The first one I'll talk about is you and Mark Cuban having a little bit of spats through the blog. Can you tell us about that and how that started?
So I told him that I think he should trade Dirk Nowitzki. And no, actually, I was on a panel and I made this, what to me was stating the obvious, is that the internet is going to enable an a la carte model of content. So you as a consumer will be able to choose what content you're interested in paying for, what channels or what TV shows. And he picked up on that comment, writing a blog post that I think the title was, Why Do Internet People Think the Content People Are Stupid? Which has nothing to do with what I said, but his thinking is that what was is what is and what should be. That the model that lives today in cable is the best model there is, and that's what's going to be the model going forward. And I disagree. I think that the cable model has been great while it lasted for the past 20 years or so, but now there's new technology and enables new business models and new consumer behaviors, and the industry needs to adjust. For some people, it may be painful. For others, it may represent opportunities. But overall, change is coming. And I think for the consumer, that change is good. It means that the user will have more control and hopefully will pay less money.
I see. One of the other kind of, you know, seedy little backstories right now is Hulu versus Boxy. You guys have been playing a game of cat and mouse since Hulu was told by their content partners, NBC Universal and Fox, to remove access to third-party players, and particularly they mentioned Boxy. With the new release of Boxy, you guys integrated Firefox or Mozilla browser into it to allow you to still access Hulu. Is there any worries with some of the new features of like the encrypted HTTP that Boxy's now introduced that might block it again?
So we introduced the Mozilla-based browser in Boxy, not for the purpose of playing Hulu. Hulu has been working before on Boxy. It was with the goal of making it easier for us and for our users to access any content that is on the internet. And I think we're getting a step closer by having the same engine as Firefox. It means that if it plays on Firefox, it would play in Boxy. With regard to encrypting HTML, and I didn't go too much into the changes that they have made that they're still making, but right now it has no impact on Boxy. Again, if it works on Firefox, it works on Boxy. They, you know, if someone wants to write code specifically to circumvent the Boxy browser, I assume they can find ways. I don't know why would they, but right now it works. We hope it's going to stay this way.
Richard, any questions back to Whitney? With the new releases of Boxy, the features of apps have been included, user-created apps that are programmed in Python. Are you guys going to focus on a way of trying to have a unified UI so that when a developer releases an app, it meshes with the UI aesthetics that you guys have already pre-made for Boxy?
Well, I think the approach that we're taking now is one of the things that we talked about in the new features that we're going to have these portals, so to speak, that are content specific so that you'll be able to see a full view of all TV shows and a full view of all movies, full view of all video clips, so on and so forth, across content providers, across sources. And that's going to be where you see a consistent experience. It's the Boxy experience and content coming from a variety of places. One of the things that we found in research is that most people don't really care where the content is coming from so long as it's the stuff that they like and it's easy to find. Now, on the other hand, the apps are source-specific, and they can be designed by and specifically for a content provider. So we're kind of following these two paths. Yes, they will ensure that they're easy to use, and yes, we'll ensure particularly that you can use them with the Apple remote, so that the lean back experience, the 10-foot experience, is preserved so that you don't have to have a laptop on your lap or you don't have to have a wireless keyboard and mouse in order to navigate. But we still want to give as much latitude as possible to these developers and designers for a variety of content providers so that they can create apps that really fit with their brand and mimic their online experience in the whole ecosystem.
Okay. Going back a few months, at CES, there was talk of the idea of having Boxy integrated into its own set-top box. You see aftermarket modifications of things like the Apple TV or Mac Mini to be a, you know, home entertainment system device that has Boxy installed on it. But what's the future of having Boxy as an actual platform and, you know, set-top box of its own?
So we're not going to create a set-top box on our own. There's plenty of other companies that are better than us in making boxes. But we are agnostic of the device that Boxy runs on. So as long as it has the horsepower to run Boxy and it's in the living room and connected to a big screen, we'd like to be there, whether it's the TV set itself or a Blu-ray player or a game console or whatever it is. I think that during 2010, you'll be able to see at least a couple of devices that are priced at $200 or less that are going to be running Boxy and supporting 1080p and just providing great and price-friendly alternatives to getting Apple TV or, you know, buying a $600 Mac Mini. I mean, Apple TV is great, but doesn't have the horsepower to run 1080p and have some issues with some 70p streams. Mac Mini is amazing, but it's $600. And I think that if we can get Boxy to run on devices that go for under $200, I think it opens up the market for, you know, more mainstream consumers.
Currently, what do you think are, in each of your, you know, job titles you have to deal with right now, what are the difficulties of working with Boxy, each one of you having your own unique perspective on it?
Well, this is Andrew, and I handle Boxy's communications and marketing, and I think for me, one of the challenges is obviously, like, we've had so much attention over the past 4 months, you know, ever since, we launched last June and really kind of took off in January when we released the open alpha for Mac and Linux and started the private alpha for Windows. And, you know, we were on the Today Show. We won G4's Best of the Best at the show. We were a CNET editor's pick. And so we started getting a lot of eyeballs on our site, and definitely a lot of people downloading Boxy. We've more than doubled the amount of users that we had in the beginning of the year. And my goal is to make sure that we keep those users, and that the people who come and try Boxy, who maybe aren't as techy as the early adopters who absolutely love us, kind of get the service and can get it and immediately see the value in it. And that speaks to a lot of what Whitney and Avner and the product team have been working on. So for me, I think the big challenge is, or the big opportunity is all the press that we've gotten, all the attention that we've gotten, and making sure that we're capitalizing on it in the best possible way.
Okay. Whitney?
Well, as the user experience designer, it's my goal to ensure that all of our users, no matter what their demographic or tech savviness or the device that they're using it on or anything, that they have an equally great experience consuming media of all kinds through Boxy. And what can be difficult is that we have a really vocal current user base. They're very engaged. They talk with Avner over Twitter every day. They comment on our forums. They go to Get Satisfaction, and they recommend product features. They're really engaged and feel very connected to Boxy as a brand, as a service. And because they're the most vocal, their ideas are the ones that we hear most frequently. But really, the mandate that I was given when I was brought on board is to find a way to bring this into the mainstream. And some of the more advanced features aren't necessarily the ones that will appeal the most to a mainstream audience. So it's really a balancing act between giving our existing users what they want and what they deserve for having been so loyal to us for so long, but at the same time giving new users and less tech-savvy users features that will bring them in early on, like Andrew was talking about, giving them a great first-time use setup process so that they quickly understand how to use Boxy, what it is, and how they can get the most out of it. So I would say that kind of balancing those two has been my biggest challenge.
Okay. Avner?
I think my challenge is mostly around juggling between all the different opportunities and things that come up during a day. And, you know, we have lots of momentum with users. There's many content partners that we're engaged with, people that want to help us with getting on devices. There's and there's internal stuff. And juggling between all of these is, you know, it's not something that is unique to Boxy. It's, I think anybody that runs a startup that is having some early traction is facing. We're 12 people in the company, and there's just too much for us to digest. So I think the hardest thing is to decide to pass on really good opportunities. And recently, we have to make those hard decisions on a daily basis. So we are passing on stuff that we think would be great for us, but we just don't have the bandwidth to deal with. So, but those are good problems to have. I mean, so I can't complain. It's fun. I mean, when we started Boxy, we started because we had the problem as users, just, you know, bringing media to our living room and trying to figure out a better user experience to do that. And that remains the daily challenge and the stuff that we care about, and how do we make it better, and how do we take all the feedback from users and implement it. And it's just, it's huge fun. So I can't complain. I mean, the challenges are there, but nothing that we cannot handle.
Thank you very much for being on the podcast today. It was a real pleasure to talk to all of you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Patrick.
Thank you.
Hey everyone, this is Patrick Roanhouse, the host and producer of the Plan 8 podcast. I hope you've enjoyed this week's audio session of the show. This marks the 15th episode in total for the podcast so far, with plenty more to come. For next week's audio session episode, we have the original web drifter himself and internet superstar, Martin Sargent. For Friday's video session, I will post my interview with Patrick Norton from my visit to the Revision 3 studios and offices. I also have some really great news to tell my fans as well. Last week, I just got word that the Plan 8 podcast now has press passes for two of the largest geek events on the internet. First is the E3 Electronic Gaming Expo in Los Angeles, California. Once the largest and grandest of the industry expos, the last few years it's tried to sit back and cool down a little bit. But by popular demand, it's back and bigger than ever. And this will be my first time going and being able to cover it. The second event is the 13th Annual Webby Awards in New York City. The Webbies have been going on since 1996, celebrating the wonders of the web. Web media in a multitude of topics, in blogs, podcasts, and graphics, are celebrated and awarded at this red carpet event. The likes of Al Gore, Stephen Colbert, and David Bowie, and many others have either hosted or been there to receive awards for their contributions to the internet and digital media culture. I've lined up a true film crew to help me in covering these events, with multi-cameras and multi-sound techs to get the best quality out of it. I'm really hoping to raise the bar out of this podcast for you. But there is a small problem, and I'm going to need your help. I need to get sponsors to help cover the travel costs for these events, which is just going to be shy of about $3,000. If any of my followers and listeners can help me in getting corporate sponsorship to help cover these costs, I'll be greatly in your debt. I'll be able to provide ad space for any corporate sponsors who wish as well. Also, you can donate personally via the PayPal donate button on the Plan 8 podcast homepage. If you donate $15 or more, you'll be entered to win one of 5 Cradlepoint mobile routers that I'll be giving away monthly. Thanks again for listening to the show, and thanks for your help. For any suggestions, feel free to email me at podcast@plan8ts.com. That's P-L-A-N, the number 8, T-S.com. Or leave a voicemail message on our Skype line at 443-483-4350. Thanks again for listening. We'll be right back.